Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm laughing right now because right at the moment that I'm recording this, when I thought this podcast wouldn't work, my dog woke up and she is a giant Great Dane puppy. The word puppy I say loosely, it's only because of age. She's huge. It's kind of like having a small horse in your office, but welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we explore on this podcast. I share strategies and tools, approaches. I also tell stories and share some of the mistakes I've made along the way. I believe that the biggest driving force for voice and choice in the classroom is the teacher. And so that's what I hope to share on this podcast. Today, we're going to talk about voice and choice with a pretty simple idea. It's that of choice menus. And I've talked about this before on my podcast, but I thought I would take a deeper dive into choice menus, especially in light of distance learning. A lot of us are feeling the effects of lower engagement. And I truly believe that one of the solutions to this engagement issue, and again, this is not some kind of magic bullet, but one of the solutions is to have more student empowerment and more ownership and more voice and choice. So we're going to talk about what it means to make this happen. And I want to begin with this idea, my own experience as a dad. So I have three kids ranging from older elementary all the way up to high school. And each one of them is handling distance learning differently. My daughter, who is the youngest, initially felt overwhelmed at the list of assignments that popped up each Monday and the scheduled meetings that she had twice a week. But once we walked her through the process of breaking down tasks and estimating work time, she was able to create a weekly schedule for herself. And she really leans toward getting more of the work done earlier so she has more free time later. I even taught her about the planning fallacy and why we should take our initial estimate and multiply it times about 1.5 to get an accurate estimate of how long things will actually work. Meanwhile, my oldest son has chosen to go the deep work route by focusing on one single subject each day and just taking a deep dive into that every single day. And then aside from that, he's working on his engineering project. The favorite part of school for each one of them has varied. My daughter loves her virtual meetings. My middle son prefers, though, to just work asynchronously and enjoys it when teachers create tutorial videos and let students jump ahead if need be. Meanwhile, my oldest son, he really likes this sort of flipped model as well, but he loves meeting with classmates and talking on FaceTime and collaborating together on this engineering project that he's doing. And seeing distance learning through the lens of my own children is a reminder that each child is different. There's no single right way to do distance learning. And I mentioned that on the recent podcast episodes. I'm passionate about this idea of if people are shaming teachers for doing it wrong, let's show ourselves some grace here and recognize we're all doing the best that we can. We're all experimenting and trying new things. And teachers have been amazing during this time. So when you hear people saying, you know, you're doing it wrong, nah, just don't buy it, because it's just not true. And while there's no instruction manual for distance learning, I do think there are some universal ideas that can guide us as we design distance learning experiences. One of those core ideas is that of student voice and choice. And one of the best things we can offer students in this time of social distancing is a sense of autonomy and control over their learning. I mentioned on the last podcast episode this idea of moving from compliance to engagement to empowerment. And one of the ways to do that is really through this idea of providing a choice menu. And I want to point out that too much choice can be a problem. There's a classic book and TED Talk from Barry Schwartz. It's the idea of the paradox of choice, where too much choice can be a problem. So we do a disservice when we have unlimited possibilities at all times. That overwhelms students. It's just too much choice for our brains. On the other hand, we need students to be empowered. We need them to have that ownership. We need for them to feel a sense of control over their learning, especially at a time like now when the world feels so chaotic. So with that in mind, I want to talk about a couple of different ways to do choice menus. Now, choice menus have been around for years, way before the pandemic, way before social isolation. And there's a lot of different terms. Some people call them choice boards, learning menus. Regardless of the terminology, the idea is the same. Create structures that provide choice for students in their learning tasks. However, I think it's important to think about the type of choice menus that we create. And so I want you to imagine a continuum from teacher-centered on the left to student-centered on the right. And this continuum is all about this idea of student autonomy or agency, their sense of control over their learning. So it goes from more teacher-centered on one side to more student-centered on the other side. And the choice menus are kind of four different choice menus that are sort of four different levels. And level one is embedded choice, level two is simple choice menus, then advanced choice menus, then independent projects. And so you have this continuum from teacher-centered to student-centered. And the way that I like to think about it is it's almost like building up scaffolding or gradual release, right? When you start out with a level one or a level two, you can then move to a level three or a level four, depending on your student's age, their maturity, their experience with student-centered learning, and also just the tasks that you want to design. This is not necessarily meant to be something you have to work through. So I want to be clear. It's not like you start out at level one, then you have to move to two, then three. It's just more of an idea of thinking about different levels of choice menus in terms of student agency. So let's take a dive into the four types. And by the way, as we take a dive into this, I just want to say, if you can hear like a little sound in the background, yes, that is my dog playing with a dog toy right now. And at first I was like, I'll just turn this off and I will not have this in the background. But the reality is, like, this is what we all deal with, right? We're all trying to do this distance learning thing, and we have interruptions from our kids, interruptions from our pets, my colleague, my coworker, has a tendency to start singing sometimes right in the middle of, say, a Zoom session, and she will start yelling at the other dogs in the neighborhood. She naps on the job all the time. She is a really challenging coworker. On the other hand, she's super awesome. She never gossips about anyone, never talks any crap in the staff lounge. So there is that, which is really cool. Anyway, getting back to this, let's take a deep dive into the four different types of choice menus. So level one is embedded choice, and the choice level here is mostly teacher directed. With this first level, students all work on the same main assignment or project, but you embed choice inside of that single assignment. So you'll put a little choice menu inside of it. So in a language arts class, students might do the same reading or answer similar questions, but they don't have a menu of options for how they present their answers, right? They might do a podcast, slideshow, sketch note, film a video, write a blog post. You get the idea. Another variation might be that they are all doing a blog post, but they have different topics they could select. So you give them a menu of options there. In a math class, they might do the same word problem, but they have a menu of options for strategies that you use. So maybe you're doing, say, second or third grade math class, and you have this idea of solve this particular problem, and some kids are doing arrays, some kids are doing skip counting, some kids are doing algorithm, and there's a menu of options on how they do it. So that's embedded choice. And I think this is a really good way to introduce choice to students who aren't used to it. Level two is the simple choice menu. This is often what we think of as a choice menu. So the choice level here is somewhat student-directed. So we've gone from somewhat teacher-directed now to somewhat student-directed. And this builds on the last idea with a key variation. Instead of having a common assignment and embedded choices, students have a common objective, right, that they're all doing, or common learning target, but a choice in the assignments that they do. This might be choices in grouping, choices in topics, choices in the products that they create. And so you have several different options. One idea would be like a book, say you're doing book reports, and they all have to write about the plot, the summary, They have to describe the theme, and they have to review the book. However, and that's the main learning target. On the other hand, there's a lot of ways that they could do it. They could do a book review podcast that's a single podcast or a pair podcast where two people talk through their books together. They could do a book trailer video that's a small group or individual book trailer for a book that they've read. They could do a book review blog post or a series of blog posts about the book. And they could do a book study with a study guide. So maybe they're running a book club based on the book they read and they create study guide questions for it and they lead that. And all of those would still do the same objective. They would still fit the same standards, but they're actually choosing which type of option that they want. Or maybe they all are doing a similar standard in terms of book reports, but you have creative alternatives to book reports. Now, if you're interested, I have a link on my blog post to some creative alternatives to book reports. These are something I partner with someone from Presto Plans, and it does cost money. I know most of what I do is give away for free, but if it's something you want to buy, you want to check out, they have my sketchnote videos that I create, and again, it's these creative alternatives to book reports. But that would be choice menu number two. I want to point out that there are some people who have done a really good job on this. So if you want to check out some examples, Caitlin Tucker and Casey Bell both have done a phenomenal job with these sort of tic-tac-toe style ones where students have to complete, you know, one from this column, and this column, and then they have like, you know, a tic-tac-toe. They have four in a row. So there's all kinds of different ways to structure this. But again, the idea is that students are selecting from a menu of options, and they're all different assignments that still fulfill the same key idea, right? They're the same objectives, the same standards, the same big ideas. Choice or level three is the advanced choice menu. So we've now gone from simple to advanced. And this one is mostly student-directed. So we've gone from somewhat to mostly student-directed. And advanced choice menus take the idea from the last step forward even more to having them self-select standards or learning targets. So, you know, they might choose the learning targets, the resources, you know, what are they going to read? What are they going to look at? What are they going to listen to? And then the product of what they're going to do to demonstrate their mastery of that standard. And there's a lot of different ways that you can do this. In math class, you might have students choose to work with a partner. Both partners decide on, say, dividing fractions. And when they look at the list of curated resources, one partner chooses to watch a tutorial video while another one looks at an online tutorial. Next, they complete the task where they're dividing fractions, and then they select the video option where they show how to solve the problems together. And that's just one idea of how it could be done. Although they're working miles away from each other from a distance, they can share their videos on something like Flipgrid. While the table works well for this, a more advanced option would be Google Form. That's a little bit more challenging to do. It's pretty tough. You have to kind of have this sort of choose your own adventure style to Google Forms. But if you look online, there's lots of tutorials that are for choose your own adventures in Google Forms. And you can basically run that as a way of doing your choice menus. So that's level three. It's this idea of advanced choice menus. Level four is the independent project, and this is entirely student directed. Here, students have complete freedom on what they're doing. They select the topics, they select the standards, they select the product of how they do it, they ask their own questions. It is 100% fully driven by students. All you do as the teacher is provide the structure. So you might use the launch process as sort of a design thinking structure. You might have a PBL structure or an inquiry-based learning structure that you're doing. And this could be something like Genius Hour. It could be a Wonder Day project. There's a lot of different options for how you do this. If you're doing Wonder Day, you know, a small example would be that you have, you know, a sheet that goes with Wonder Day, and I've just added it to the Wonder Day resource that you can download for free. And it has grouping, so students choose their grouping, they choose their question, they choose their resources for their research, and they choose their product, their end product on what they're going to create. And this is a fully, you know, student-centered approach, but you are still guiding them. You're creating that initial assignment for them, and you're creating the structures and scaffolds and the built-in accountability for them to be able to have a ton of freedom in what they're doing, but at the same time have just enough structure so that they don't get lost in the amount of freedom that they have. Even when you try these things, I just want to point out, you know, there will be mistakes. You'll always have to experiment and try new things. And ultimately, that's the thing. Student choice is a long journey. We are in the midst of social distancing, and we are experimenting as we go. Some students might be at a place where they can only handle a level one or level two choice menu, and that's totally fine. The important thing is that they are seeing how much you are honoring their agency and autonomy. And in the end, when we give them that choice, we're empowering them to be self-directed learners, engaging in creativity and critical thinking. In other words, they own the learning. And I think when they have that sense of autonomy and choice, they will remember you as the teacher during this time of quarantine who gave them that autonomy and empowered them to own the learning. And that, I think truly that they will remember forever, despite the challenges and the mistakes that might occur along the way. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy it, will you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts? Again, thanks so much for listening. Thank you for doing the great work that you're doing. Go out and make something awesome.